This is Sheila Cagle with the Communicate Influence podcast. In this episode, I speak with Nick Meir, a London, UK-based leadership consultant, about the qualities required to be a strong leader. That is, someone who can create a positive workplace culture and an environment conducive to success. And of course, you've guessed it, one of the key attributes is communication. Nick believes that very few leaders are good communicators, and this is down to a lack of self-awareness. What can be done about this? Nick shares his perspective and his solutions.
This episode is brought to you by the Digital Assistant Academy. The Digital Assistant Academy is a new online learning center launching its first course, Voice Interaction Design, in October. If you want to add to your skill set or start on a new career path, this could be the opportunity you've been looking for. Go to digitalassistant.academy to learn more. That's digitalassistant.academy. Setting the standard in online voice technology education.
Hi, Nick. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks very much.
It's good to have you here. So in this episode, we're going to talk about leadership communication, how leaders communicate, the words they use, the channels they use, how they present themselves, everything, the body language that makes up communication. And I suppose my assumption when I was a lot younger, that would be that every leader is a great communicator, otherwise they wouldn't be in that position. But that's not true, is it, Nick?
No. I suppose you want me to say a little bit more.
Yeah, that would be good, yeah. Nick, tell us why. I mean, what is the problem? How could they become CEO or, you know, a member of the C-suite and, you know, have a good interview, presumably, and yet still not be very good at communicating? What's happening?
Let's strip this back, I think, first of all, and look at what communication is. I think all too often communication is mooted as being the spoken word. If you said, what is communication to most people, they would talk about the words that are spoken. And communication is so much more than that. I think I would define communication as being the movement of information from one place to another. In its most basic form, it's about the movement of information. And information takes many forms, especially at a leadership level. I remember very, very early in my career, there was a very charismatic editor who used to walk into the newsroom and bounce in every day. And he always had a big smile on his face and would always walk around the floor and he would ask people how they are. He'd talk to them. Anyway, one day, He walked in and he didn't bounce around. His shoulders were rounded, his head was down, and he was not behaving in the way that he normally behaves. Every person in that newsroom noticed, to the extent that people started saying to me, are you okay? And I went, yeah, I'm fine. And it turned out something had happened. It's irrelevant what. But everybody noticed that communication. And it was a communication because he was communicating something about himself and about how he was feeling. There was a movement of information, albeit via body language, micro expressions on his face, but there was a definite movement of information and everybody knew all was not well. And I think the first thing that I notice about certain leaders is how they move and how they communicate with their being. And often that can be very negative. And you will, to come back to your question about not all leaders are great communicators, it depends on how you define great communication. And if we're defining communication as the movement of information from one place to another, then all of a sudden, you see a leader, the way in which they walk into the room communicates some sort of fear some sort of negative messaging. Now, they may not have said a word that said anything at all, yet they have moved information from one place to another in a negative way, and that's not great. And all too often, I see and have seen in the past leaders using their status and their body language in a way that subjugates their people. Mm. I will never forget many years ago in the wake of the banking crisis, I was doing some work for a major retail bank in the UK. And we were involved in conducting a crisis management exercise. And I was in a meeting room somewhere in London. And there were probably about 13 or 14 members of the leadership team. And the guy who was the CEO of the bank wasn't there. He was a few minutes late. And everybody was, there was a bubble of conversation. And then he walked in. And the room fell silent as he walked slowly to his desk. It reminded me of being at school when we used to have to stand up when teachers entered the room, which was this kind of mark of respect.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, it sent at that moment that obviously this guy is in charge, that moment in the bank, this guy is in charge. The way he's walked in, the way he's established himself at the head of the table. Now, some leaders might think that's a good thing. I don't happen to think it is necessarily, because everything emanates then from that one point. Everybody's looking to that leader in what I would say is a more fearful environment. And as we know, people don't do their best work when they operate under a regime of fear.
Yeah, that's so true, Nick. It's so much more, as you've explained with those examples, than just the movement of information. It's the conveyance of emotion and the impact that has on people.
Yeah, and that's what creates cultures. And I often talk about how culture eats strategy for breakfast. But the culture in any business is always set from the top, always. There are no exceptions to that. And the way in which leaders behave, the way in which they're seen, and the way in which they show up is all part of the communication. And I fear that not enough attention is paid to that inside some organizations. Now, where you see leaders that really do get it right, and like him or loathe him, I would say that Richard Branson is one of those leaders that gets it right in terms of communication. Because when he turns up, you see quite a humble man. Mm. You see someone who feels like he's very self-deprecating. I'll never forget a news interview that Richard Branson did in the wake of the Cumbria train crash in the UK. Some of your listeners won't know about this, but this goes back a good few years, probably about 15 years, I should think now. Mm-hmm. And there was a major train crash in the in Cumbria in the UK, and it involved a load of carriages disappearing down the side of a bank. I can't remember if people were killed. I think the train driver was killed in it, from memory.
A lot of people won't know that in Britain, Richard Branson operates Virgin Trains as well.
He does. And he was there were two leaders on the scene of that train crash that morning. One was a guy from Network Rail, and he was interviewed against a backdrop of the train hanging over the edge of this railway bank, in a high-vis jacket, looking very uncomfortable with a hard hat on. And he was very much under the cosh. Richard Branson, however, he turned up, and I can still visualize him now, surrounded by people, sort of a little bit away from the crash, looking slightly disheveled. He'd just rushed away from a holiday, and visibly emotional about this situation, and clearly speaking very much from the heart. Now, You would argue that that was staged PR, and quite possibly it was. But his whole language, his whole communication was all about, all he wanted to communicate was, I care. The other leader on the scene wanted to communicate, it wasn't our fault, and we don't think it was our fault. Mm. And he looked uncomfortable in that situation. And I strongly believe that leaders have to be paying attention to everything, because people in their organization notice absolutely everything about a leader. If I go back to my first example of the news editor that used to walk into the newsroom, people used to look at him every day and they notice the smallest things, the tiniest, teeniest things people notice, because they're looking for information. Because mm-hmm. when you work inside an organization, who do you look for information for? You look to it from the leadership.
Yeah.
And it's the same as communicating in a crisis. In the absence of information, people fill in the gaps. Mm. They step into the vacuum and they will just look for any snippet of communication that they can get from a leader.
And this must be hard for a leader. It means that, you know, they're in the public, well, in the culture's eye, so to speak, all the time. And sometimes we forget that. You know, you might be standing at the lift, the elevator, you know, looking at something or thinking about something, and you're unaware that people across in an open plan office are watching you again, trying to glean information. So let's talk about self-awareness, which is something that you've written about, Nick, in the past, and how that is developed. And if a leader doesn't have it, how do you get them to get to that place?
They have to want to get to that place. I think that you've got two different types of leader. This is just in my experience. You have those leaders that will make it to the top, that will end up being the CEOs, the ones that will end up being highly successful leaders. And you've got the ones that could have been. The ones that could have been tend to not really look themselves in the mirror, and they tend to want to behave like a leader that they perceive to be successful. And those leaders tend to be far more autocratic. They tend to behave quite badly sometimes, perhaps not treat people with respect. Perhaps they will be the ones that dictate their strategy. They will talk about my business and my team. And becoming self-aware is part of a process of development, where you become your own person and you're happy in your own skin, and you develop a level of security that eventually comes out of every pore of your body. If you are showing up to work and you are not the person that you are at home, people are going to detect that. Because generally speaking, because we have caveman brains, because our brains have not evolved very much over the past 200 years, whilst the world has picked up a huge amount of pace, our brains are really designed to pick up on some warning signals. And we don't know, you know, this is why people have a feeling about somebody. And this is why first impressions are so very, very powerful, because we used to have to pick upon danger at a moment's notice. You had to be able to recognize that the person in front of you was about to kill you. I did read somewhere once that the homicide rate thousands of years ago, when we were all living in caves, was something like 30 or 40%. Oh, some huge, huge number.
Yeah.
And so we have highly developed senses of danger that we don't even realize. And these are picked up through micro expressions on the face. And you can kind of Google this sort of stuff and look at research into micro expressions and our ability as human beings to pick up on subconscious cues. And being aware of your own micro expressions, the way in which, you know, where your blind spots are, if you like, as a leader is so important. Because that's what's going to hold you back, ultimately, from getting to the top. To come back to your point, in your very first question, Sheila, leadership is about great communication. It's about that great movement of information from one place to another. But that information has to be positive. Now, that doesn't mean to say it's always good news, but the it has to be not sending negative personal messages.
Or blaming or making accusations.
Blame culture comes from the top. It comes straight from the top, always. And blame culture is probably the most toxic communication culture that there is. And it creates more work. I've worked inside of organizations where you see the blame culture at work because there's about 300 people copied in on an email that clearly don't need to be, because the person sending the email needs to show that this is them covering their back. And when you see that kind of high stakes blame culture in place, I've never done the research, but I imagine that there is a clear proportional link to the number of emails that get sent and the number of people that get copied into those emails.
That's fascinating. Now let's go back to the self-awareness and, you know, the psychology of a leader. For you, it makes me wonder, as a consultant or someone in a comms team, you're getting into quite a personal realm there if you need to be able to give feedback to someone on, you know, how you look or your micro expressions. Can you give us an example of how you've taken that journey with a leader from, you know, they might be abrasive or they might frown a lot and be unaware of it, to, you know, transformation into someone who is a really good communicator in every sense of the word, the way you've explained?
There's one guy that I've worked with for many years. And I said to him from the outset that this was over a drink late one night in a bar somewhere in Europe. We weren't long into our relationship. And I said, you know, you're going to pay me a lot of money over the coming months and even years to turn you into the person that you really are. And he looked at me and sort of quizzically. And I said, you are a very warm, authentic person. And people need to see that. Your team needs to see that. And down the years, we've worked together on all sorts of speeches, videos, keynotes, whatever. And he's really developed, and he really gets who he is, gets where he's from, and he uses that. Now, it's easy for me to come into a business and work with a leader and say, I don't like the way your hair looks today. You look like you've been dragged through a hedge backwards. Perhaps you could just do that once again and this time remember to smile. It's very easy for me to do that. It's less easy for people who work for that person to do that. Mm-hmm. So it is handy to, when you're a coach, to be able to come in and give pragmatic upfront advice. There've been CEOs that I've been introduced to that we haven't ended up working together. Maybe the chemistry wasn't right, but that the chemistry and the trust has to be there, because a leader has to be in a position to be able to receive the constructive feedback and believe that you have the authority to give that feedback, but they've also got to like you. As well.
And trust you.
Yeah. So, and it's also about working out how a particular leader ticks, how you're going to communicate with that person, how what type of communication is going to work for them. Are they more auditory? Are they more kinesthetic? You know, what we've got to listen for all the visual and audio cues that they give you, and then you've got to map your language to them to how you get them to do the stuff. You know, there's quite a lot to it, but it's essentially gaining their trust and then being honest with them. Mm-hmm. Because I think the one thing that I have learned, being a CEO, being a leader in a large organization is a very lonely job. There's relatively few people that leader would trust to give them the feedback, but they also don't open up to many people. That's just sort of part and parcel of the job. And a lot of them will drink with their team, you know, they'll have a couple of beers, but then they'll head away. So they don't necessarily have that same collegiate atmosphere with their teams that their teams will have.
No, it does make sense. I mean, you can't be kind of like on a level with the team and their best friend, and then, you know, the next day their leader, where you're making difficult decisions. Yeah, no, it makes sense. Yeah.
But so you know, I think a lot of leaders have got coaches, and a lot of, you know, certainly the better ones will have who will be helping them with their blind spots.
Now, let's move on a little bit and talk about the words that they use. And recently I've noticed that there's been a real decrease in corporate speak, at least, you know, publicly and in some organizations that I've been involved with. I'm not sure if you've noticed that, Nick, but the words that people use, how do you get them to talk differently? You know, maybe as though they're at home as opposed to in the office, and stop using jargon or, you know, a dialect, as you once described it. What's involved there?
I call them out on it. I honestly, once I spoke to one leader once. I said, "What was that that has just come out of your mouth?"
Yeah.
Do you talk like that at home? I think there has been a silent revolution that's been perpetuated by a series of memes that went round Facebook. I need to get this right. There was a little flow chart saying, is it okay to use the phrase reach out? And the flow chart was, are you a member of the four tops? Yes, it's okay. No, don't use it.
Yeah.
And I remember actually when I first moved into the corporate world, having spent a career trying to write scripts for people to consume at 7:30 on BBC One with their teas on their knees, which is a sort of it was an expression that I used with a lot of my producers. You're writing for people with their teas on the knees at 7:30.
Mm-hmm.
So you've kind of got to tell them that you're going to tell them, then you tell them, then you tell them that you've told them in terms of how you script, and you've got to keep it really simple. And I walked into this world where people are circling back, reaching out. They're using all these strange expressions that nobody ever uses around the dinner table. And it was the sort of words and the sort of buzz phraseology, actually, that a lot of it came out of, certainly in the UK, there was local authority speak that was buzzing around at the time of New Labour and Blair, and all these weird new expressions popped up. And it just makes people sound like they've swallowed a corporate dictionary. And it was almost a challenge to see how many of these strange words and phrases that nobody ever utters outside an office you can actually cram together in one sentence.
Well, I think reach out came from originally from the US. I could be mistaken, but, you know, I know in Britain there are places where you find a great resistance to you know, the importation of phrases and expressions, whereas younger people, they won't think about it. They'll just start using them.
Yeah. Can you just drop somebody a line? Can I give them a call?
Mm.
Why don't you reach out? That feels inclusive. Reach out. But it did come from the US. It was the Four Tops. They sang about it in the 1960s.
Yeah.
And the whole notion that this title of this track from the Four Tops has come to dominate corporate culture in the late 90s and the noughties moving into the 2010s is just plainly ridiculous. So if you use the word reach out on a regular basis, stop it and stop it now.
I have been guilty of using it, yeah.
This makes you sound like a corporate autonomon, dear listener.
Yeah. Now, do you actually put words into a leader's mouth, or do you want to hear, you know, what they would say? Their authenticity, their real speak.
I've written speeches. I've written TED Talks. I've written keynotes at major events. But part of what I used to do for a living was to be able to write for presenters and particular people. And so being able to capture the phraseology and the rhythm of speech of a particular leader is something that one does when I'm writing a script. But it's got to be right. It's got to be right for them. It's got to be the right rhythm. It's got to be part of their personality when you write for somebody.
Mm-hmm.
The worst thing, the very worst thing that happens is, and I've seen this, is when you get somebody from the internal communications team writing a script for a leader, which just sounds like it's a press release.
Yeah.
And a particularly bad one at that. I think it's fine to put words in a leader's mouth because quite often these people are very, very busy. They haven't got time to sit down and write a few minutes of script or, you know, 90 seconds of material. And, you know, it's not their main skill set sometimes. They wouldn't necessarily know how to structure it. But I've seen some absolute shocking examples of people writing scripts for their leadership team. And it's in no way the right thing to do. Actually, I've got a client who recently I was involved in a coaching session, and she was complaining bitterly because her communications team had said to her, "Hey, got a really good idea. Why don't you do a video like this?" And it was, she sent me the link. It was one of the Jacinta Ardern videos. This is actually quite a famous one. I think probably a lot of your listeners will have seen this. It's where she delivers the achievements of her government over the past couple of years. And she does it in a minute or 2 minutes. And she just reels off and it's absolutely brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
But it's Jacinta Ardern. It's not anybody else. It's her. And actually, in some ways, kind of crystallizes what can go wrong when people start writing and putting words in leaders' mouths, because there's no way that the lady that I was coaching would ever have delivered something like that. And it wouldn't have been right for her to do that, because that's not who she is.
Yeah.
And that's sometimes when I think you get relatively inexperienced communicators and communications teams, what they will do is they will favor style over substance and an adoption of another leadership style and try and map it onto their leader. And again, that's not necessarily their fault, because they might not have the experience to be able to work with that particular leader to establish the leader's voice. And it's all about establishing your own voice and not thinking about other people and how other people deliver. You've got to have your own voice.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, that's going to take time, and you can't expect a newish or a young corporate comms person to be able to figure that out really quickly.
No.
And I mean, one thing as well that comes to mind is when you think about New Zealand's Prime Minister, Jacinda, and, you know, she's energetic and exuberant. And a lot of people think, oh, you know, I've got to be like that, you know, but then you look at, for example, Angela Merkel, and, you know, she's very I'd describe her as serious and very kind of almost stilted in her presentation. And yet she commands presence, doesn't she? You know, when she speaks, because it's not that often, especially on TV, people listen. So I think it's about being yourself and delivering your message in the way that works for you. And once people get to know you, they'll respect that.
Yeah. I think that drives to the nub of the issue. And it's the same in the broadcast world where I come from. The difference between the great presenters and the also-ran presenters is the great presenters know their own voice. They're comfortable in their own skin, and obviously they're very good at their job, but they engage an audience with themselves. And then other presenters will look up to them and try and copy them. In the UK, you've got a radio presenter called Chris Evans, who's had a hugely successful career in broadcast. And very occasionally you'll see younger and up-and-coming radio presenters trying to sort of imitate his style, and it doesn't work. And you get nowhere until you can discover who you are and establish your own voice. You're never going to engage an audience on any authentic level. And I suppose people are going to listen to this. I'm feeling like I'm sounding very negative, and I'm sort of throwing all the roadblocks in the way. In actual fact, in many ways, communication is all about sitting back, and it's relaxing, and it's delivering that movement of information from one place to another in your way, in your voice, and in your style. Now, the really great leaders are the ones that people are sort of automatically drawn to. There's something about them. And what you can do is you can learn some of the techniques, and some of those techniques are those techniques that I do teach. For example, if you really want to get people's attention, you've got to understand the art of stillness. And being an active listener, bearing in mind that listening is the movement of information from one place to another. And what separated, for example, Bill Clinton from many people, whether you like him or whether you loathe him, people around him and people who met him always remember meeting him because of the amount of attention that he gave them.
Mm.
He communicated with people by actively listening. And again, I think if you are going to be a great leader, being a fantastic active listener, engaging with the person that is speaking with you and using your eyes and being still whilst you're listening, that's a fabulous form of communication because it sends so many messages. Because most of the time, people just want to be heard. And again, I think some leaders fall into the trap of thinking that they're the most important person in the room.
Mm-hmm. And of course, men do get a bit of a bad rap, don't they, on the listening thing, unfortunately. But a lot of people don't listen. It doesn't matter, you know, male, female, or in between. If you're transgender, yeah.
Somebody, that's all right. Somebody once said to me, "It's two ears and one mouth," in that order.
Yeah, that's so true. So now the communication channels, that is so important, and I still can't believe that this is happening. But the issue around email overload. And we've learned during the pandemic that there are other ways of connecting, you know, Google Chat, Skype, Zoom, etc. Why are organizations still relying so much on email? And, you know, I know places where I've worked that emails aren't read, they're just deleted. That's not great. You're not even pretending to read or listen. You're just not paying attention, or you don't want to. You've switched yourself off. So how does a leader or even a senior manager decide which channels to use when?
Depends for me. I have a strong personal belief that 80% of emails that get exchanged inside an organization are for political purposes. It's politics. It's ass covering. And it doesn't achieve anything. When you're getting 500 emails a day, as some people do, and upwards sometimes, they're just not going to get read. They're just not going to get read. But it's the same with presentations. So if you want to look at the stats, they're all out there on average engagement times of a typical presentation. And I have lost times, the number of times that I've said this in sessions and coaching in workshops. There's a reason that TED Talks are 18 minutes long. And that's because it has been identified that even the greatest speakers in the world with the best structured speech, with the best deck behind them, the best form of visual aids, on average, will engage an audience for no more than 18 minutes. And yet, you still see people going into meeting with slide decks 50, 60, 70, 80 pages long. Why? It's astonishing to me that you can point out to people that the average engagement span of a human being is something like 6 or 7 minutes before you need to change tack and do something different, which is why, of course, television builds texture. A documentary will have a ton of texture in it that's designed to signpost, to do all sorts of stuff, but primarily to keep the engagement of the audience. So it's the same as emails with PowerPoint decks. Exactly the same problem. Most of it is political. And what happens is you see individuals, especially, again, this becomes a cultural issue, when they're going into a meeting, especially where it's a briefing with a leader, where you've got a number of people in the room. I've got to get everything out that I know about this subject. Woof. Mm-hmm. I hate to use this word, but there's a sort of information vomit. Just sort of goes up onto a deck with bullet points and goodness knows what. And this is no way to influence people to get stuff done, because you see, I've been in meetings where you see people, they're on their laptops, they're not paying attention, and there's a presentation going on. And aside from anything else, that's just downright rude. But I've made the point. You have to cut down the amount of information that you are trying to give in one chunk. Again, that's political. Mm. That's a purely political play. So my recommendation has always been use video. Mm. Use video. Mm-hmm. Use loads of video. Now, people say, people aren't going to sit and watch video. Well, I have seen open rates on emails increase from 50% up to 80, 90% when people know that they're just going to be watching a video.
Wow, that's impressive.
It's enormous. The engagement rate is so much better. And of course, when you see a leader's face, you're feeding off their micro expressions. And also, generally speaking, you'll, providing it's well made and the messaging is crafted correctly, you'll just get far better engagement. And it gives, especially in a global organization, it gives visibility to the leader as well.
I wanted to ask, do you have any books or videos that you recommend for people who can't hire your consultancy or at the point in time they may feel they don't have a budget for it, but you know, they've been intrigued or moved or you know, they want to do something? Yeah,
one of the best books which deals with the subject of leadership communication is a book called Creativity Inc. It's one that I often recommend to people. And I'll remember the guy's name in a minute. He was the guy that used to run Pixar. Hang on a minute. Ed Catmull. Creativity, okay. Inc. Mm-hmm. It highlights all the a lot of the leadership issues that they used to have at Pixar and tracks through some of the stuff that they used to do to create great stories. After all, the most effective way to communicate is through great storytelling. That book highlights that, but it also gives some great tips on how you can flatten the structure and you can break down that hierarchy. But I think if there's one thing that I would encourage people to do, and especially if you're at the start of a communications career, is it's all about being yourself and being who you are and encouraging authentic communication, real communication, and not surrounded by corporate speak. Cut through the bullshit. Be pragmatic. Be transparent. People love transparency. And of course, you can't say everything because there's issues that are confidential, but be honest and be open.
And yeah, I mean, just before we wrap up, I think that what you're saying is so important, but when you're delivering a message, but your micro expressions or even the more obvious facial expressions, if they're not congruent with what you're saying, that creates tremendous confusion amongst people. And then you've got a real problem.
People can smell it.
Yeah, everyone will be able to relate to that in their personal relationships. You know, he said this, but then he did this, or she said that, but it didn't happen. And it's the same at work. If someone is, you know, saying something or expressing some kind of conviction and they're not, you know, walking the talk, or they don't look as though they believe what they're saying, that's a real problem.
Yeah, I think the other thing is, you picked up the issue of congruence and hit it on the head beautifully there. You absolutely have to be congruent. And that, again, is down to what we're talking about earlier on, is self-awareness. But you've also got to be aware of your audience. And when you think about this, the greatest broadcasters, filmmakers, radio presenters in the world, they understand their audience. They understand their audience better than that. They spend hours and hours researching and understanding what makes their audiences tick, how they're going to engage their audiences. And that's what the most successful businesses do as well. The widgets that get sold, if you're going to sell a lot of widgets, you're going to understand your audience. You're going to get insight. And the most successful leaders get insight. They look at staff surveys. They look at what people are saying. They listen to people, that active listening that I was talking about. They do all that and then start talking about what people care about. I think if there was one takeaway today, it would be about being true to yourself and being authentic. If there was a second one, is it's understanding your audience. And when every time you communicate, add that editorial filter, why should they care? Why should they care about what I am about to say? And if the answer is because I'm the boss, then you've got a problem.
That's autocratic, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's no good. And it's always a very hard question to ask, why should they care? But if you do that and you just implement that very, very simple filter, you'll transform your communications overnight.
And do you have any favorite TED Talks that you'd recommend? You've recommended the book Creative Inc.
There's been some great TED moments. Most of my favorite ones relate to creativity, because I'm fascinated by that whole process and how wonderful it is to work inside a creative organization. And don't get me wrong, I've worked with some fantastic people. I've been so fortunate to work inside some great businesses where they do some great work and they produce fabulous, fabulous products. And that's always when you've got a great free-flowing structure of communication and an ability for people to be open, authentic and transparent.
That's so true. It's always fascinating talking to you, Nick.
Well, thank you.
I wish these podcast episodes would be an hour or 2 hours long, but knowing my audience, they have to be shorter. So there you go.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
But yeah, it's great. And you deliver tremendous value whenever I speak with you. So appreciate it.
That is most kind of you, Sheila. The English £5 note is in the post.
Oh, well, I won't be able to spend it, but I'll keep it for my next trip. Well, it's great. We'll have some extra things for listeners in the show notes as well, books and any TED Talks that will really help with this. And you enjoy the rest of your weekend, Nick.
Thank you very much indeed. I will make lockdown a lovely thing.
Okay, good luck with that. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.